Blog Talk Radio.
Once upon a time, I almost lost my mind. I was lonely, so lonely. Once upon a time, hoping every day things would go my way.
Your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. I have my guest co-host on the line. I'll bring her in one moment, but I'd like to thank everybody for stopping by for this evening's show. We have two special guests here. You know, hope everybody enjoyed the day. It was beautiful out. I got out a little bit in it and, you know, did a few things, but mostly around the house. I did some things as well. I'm going to bring in my co-host. I'm sorry, my guest co-host, Jade. Good evening, Jade. Are you there, darling?
Hey, how are you? How's everybody?
I am fantastic, darling. Just fantastic. We have two wonderful guests this evening. I'm going to, you know, get into their little bios, and then we'll bring them on, okay?
Excellent. Can't wait.
Okay. All right. Megan Hussey is a feminist erotic author and journalist who is also an activist on behalf of abused women. A lifelong advocate of women's rights, she was awarded a certificate of appreciation from LINCS, Family Support Domestic and Sexual Violence Prevention Task Force, and Sunrise Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center in 2011 for her newspaper coverage of domestic violence issues. In the fictional category, she's written for paranormal-based fantasy romances for companies that include Class Act Books, Malign Books, My Pouty Lips, Phase Books, Excite Books, and have worked with women-oriented adult companies such as Playgirl and Good Vibrations. Last year, she wrote a book, Blooming Love, that concerned the topic of domestic violence. She offered the book free of charge to domestic violence and sexual assault centers. Just last month, Megan's co-writer, Shakara, and herself published a book, Two for Trenton, donating half of all the proceeds to the V-Day $1 billion Rising effort to help abused women. Shakara is an energy practitioner and a publisher at metaphysical erotic, and she shares Megan's beliefs and viewpoints. Wow, that sounds very interesting, doesn't it, Jade?
Wow, I'm just like impressed.
Yeah,
love it,
so
love it. And I love that they donate a little bit of their proceeds. That is also excellent.
Right, because, you know, women who are abused and, you know, neglected, they're so overlooked. And, you know, sometimes they're faulted for the things that happen to them. So we're going to get into a conversation about Megan and how she got involved with this situation. And, you know, we'll take it from there. And then we're going to, you know, get into the energy practitioner Shakara, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing her name right, but if I'm not, we will learn once I get the two ladies on the line. With that being said, I'm going to bring in our guests for this evening, Megan and Shakara. Good evening, ladies. How are you?
Well, good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, how do you pronounce your name, Shakara? Shakara?
It's Shakara, like the pyramids.
Shakara. Okay.
Shakara.
Okay.
Hey, that's a beautiful name.
Yes, it
Thank
is.
You.
Yes, it is. Yeah, so Megan, tell us a little bit about, you know, take us back to your childhood. What was your childhood like, and you have any siblings, and, you know, how did you become involved with your writing and then getting involved with domestic violence?
Yes, well, I tell you, my childhood, for the most part, as far as my family, was wonderful. You know, I have a mother that I absolutely adore, and also my father as well. Now, my father is no longer with us, but my mother is. And I couldn't have asked for better parents. I was raised in Indiana, and, you know, I had a very nice, you know, peaceful childhood. I got into writing, I believe, that I picked up a pen just about as soon as I could walk, it seems like. You know, I just always loved telling stories, you know, and I just always loved making up stories and writing them down. And I would send myself off on adventures with, like, the Cat in the Hat, you know, and things. And now, you know, as a child, I didn't know that you could get sued for that sort of thing. You know, it's like stealing other people's characters. Not a good idea.
Wow.
But yeah, so my family life was wonderful, but unfortunately, there was someone outside my family who committed a horrific act of violence against a cousin of mine when I was a child. I had a cousin who was stalked and murdered by an ex-boyfriend, basically.
Wow.
And she was a wonderful, wonderful person. She was a mother of two and a career woman. And she was very special to our family. And, you know, so for me, that just really gave me the motivation just from the get-go. It was a terrible way to learn about that sort of issue, but it did kind of bring me a special awareness to know that that was how I was going to use this writing talent that I enjoyed so much, that I was going to try to use it in the service of abused women.
Now, how old were you when your cousin was murdered?
I was actually about 10 when this happened.
About 10. And this idea developed in your head to look out for abused women at that particular age, or was it when you got older and you thought back on it that you wanted to get involved with abused women?
Well, it was something that from the moment that it happened, I was just struggling. My whole family, you know, was struggling to come to terms with it. And, you know, as I saw the grief of my family, I just knew even back then that I would do something. I wrote little poems and essays about what had happened. And as I grew older, I started to recognize other instances. I remember in high school, a friend of mine was raped. And then there was another friend of mine who came to school with a black eye, you know, that her boyfriend had given her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just seemed like it was always there, you know. And I think that's true of all of us. All you have to do is look and it's there, you know. And so even in high school, I started doing activist writing sort of thing, and it really kicked into high gear in college. I became involved in a feminist group, and I started organizing. I helped organize Take Back the Night marches and domestic violence remembrances. And it's just always been there.
So you've never actually been a victim of domestic violence or anything, have you?
No, I have been stalked several times. I do know what it's like to be stalked. But other than that, not any sort of domestic violence, no.
Okay,
was it someone that was like real near and dear to you that encouraged you to help women that was in domestic violence?
I think that, I have a mother and two older sisters and also a father that were always very socially conscious. And I think that particularly after what happened to my cousin, I think that they all encouraged me. And friends, you know, and also, you know, watching friends go through certain things. And I've always, there are people that I've met, along the way that I'll never forget, you know, who just really kept, you know, lighting the fire beneath me, because it is a fire, you know, it's a passion that never goes out. I feel compelled to help these women.
Okay. So when you first got involved with the domestic violence that you got involved with, what type of feelings was going through you?
You mean like in working with victims?
Or? Yes.
Yes. Well, I know that through my college activism, I would meet people who had been like, you know, victims of date rape and, or domestic violence. And I think that, when you really start to meet these people, it puts a face on it. And then, you know, when you write the articles and when you bring awareness to the public, you know, people start coming out of the woodwork, you know, people that you've known for years who've said, I was molested as a child, or, you know, I was beaten, or, you know. And so to me, it just really, I mean, sometimes people, when they talk about the 1 in 3 women who have been abused, people say that's an exaggeration. I'm not even sure that covers it. You know, I mean, I honestly think that it might be higher than that. And so the feeling that I have is incredible empathy and just like a maternalism and warmth towards these women, you know, but also just an anger, you know, like we've got to stop this and we've got to stop it now, you know. So.
Right. Well, let me ask you that. What was one of the worst cases of domestic violence you can remember, and what type of an effect did it have on you at that time that you learned of it and a little ways down the line?
Well, I think that, throughout working with, there is a shelter that I do stories for quite frequently, Sunrise Domestic Violence Shelter, and it's hard to pinpoint a single case because it's just really, I know that a couple of years in a row I've covered 1 Billion Rising marches, and that's what Sakara and I did our 2 for Triton fundraiser, for in honor of 1 Billion Rising. And I know that at the events that I covered, at one, there was a woman whose daughter, had been abused, and there was a man whose first wife had been abused. So there was permanent brain damage done to her by her first husband. And so even though she got out of the situation and remarried, she ended up dying at the age of 60 Now, this was a woman who had worked in the computer industry, who was a brilliant woman, and that, you know, monster that she was married to had abused her so badly in the head that eventually it took her life, you know.
Mm.
And to me, that was one of the stories that had one of the biggest impacts, because to me it was so sad that she had escaped. You know, she had survived the situation. She had found a wonderful man and gotten remarried. And, you know, still, she couldn't escape it. You know, eventually it took her life.
Hmm. Wow. Well, what about children? Do you have you been involved with children or just adults? Just adult women?
Well, through my work with Sunrise, you know, I have done stories about abused children, and it was interesting with the 1 Billion Rising story that I did just about a month ago. There was actually an event held at a high school in my area, and there were a lot of kids. Well, there was a very brave young lady who came forward and offered to tell her story of childhood abuse over the school intercom, which I thought was so brave. And I know that there are children even younger than that are coming forward. And so it's like when I see these little warriors, you know, I mean, it just makes me, you know, it just makes me want to do more. You know, because you just want to protect them. And even though their innocence has been stolen, you know, you still want to just, you know, to make sure that their future is as happy as possible.
Okay, let me ask you this. When any of the women, did you talk directly to them? Did you interact with them? Or you just went to the shelter, and what did you do there?
Well, usually with some of my activism, you know, in terms of organizing marches and parades, I do interact directly, like with women who want to speak. And as far as stories, it's kind of like a mixture. Like when I do a news story or an essay, I interview the counselors. But if there's someone who wants to come forward and talk, you know, then I'll interview them as well. And to me, the challenge is always to be very sensitive, you know, to them, because these things are very personal. They're not easy to talk about. And so I always strive, to be as sensitive as possible.
Well, yeah, because I know that some women are so torn up and, you know, just so messed up in the mind behind being abused so much until they shut down and they don't want to talk about things that happened to them, you know. And, you know, I think it's sad when a woman is abused and then she's ignored by the system. Nobody's trying to help her out, you know, and that's another reason I think some women shut down. They try to get help and nobody wants to help them, you know, or do anything for them, so they go back into that situation. They settle for, you know, the beatings, the abuse, and, you know, the manipulation and all the things that they're going through, opposed to getting out of that situation, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why
very
I was
true.
Asking, did you speak to any of them, you know, to find out? Because I met a young lady who had been abused by her husband. This woman was so paranoid until it wasn't funny, you know, because she always thought that he was watching her, or he was hacking into her computer and, you know, just doing all kind of crazy things. And at one point I told her, I said, you know, you really have to get on with your life, because if he was going to do anything to you, you know, I by all this time he would have, you know, come for you or did something. But come to find out, her husband doesn't even live in the same town that she lives in. She did find that out, you know. But I think women should be given some type of assurance that, you know, they can be protected. And I mean protected not by a piece of paper, you know, giving them these affidavits saying that the husband or your boyfriend has to stay away from you. I mean actually protected by the police, you know. Maybe the police needs to drive around the house a few times, or, you know, give them shelter in a safe house or something like that. Because a lot of women, you know, they just go through this thing of, he's watching me, I know he's going to get me, you know, and that's a terrible way to feel. you know, go through life, having to look over your shoulders and worrying about somebody coming after you, you know, wanting to kill you, you know. So, yeah, it's really sad, you know, that women have to go through those types of changes, and then when they get the help, it's too late. You know,
yes,
that the husband or the boyfriend has either killed them or maimed them or did something to them that was far so worse than what have things had started out, because once he figures if he can get away with it one time, he'll do it again and again and again until eventually he just kills the victim. You know, and that's a bad way to go as well. You know,
absolutely, because it diminishes her quality of life, you know, so that she feels like a stalked animal. She doesn't feel like a free person living in the good old USA. You know, she feels like a stalked and trapped animal. And nobody deserves to feel that way. And that's why, absolutely, we need to have tougher penalties and also tougher enforcement, you know, because, you know, a restraining order is just a piece of paper unless there's somebody there enforcing it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, because they
yeah,
piece
many
of paper
times
really
they
doesn't.
Ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
They ignore the protective order.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yes, because if he is, you know, angry and crazy enough to do that in the first place, a piece of paper isn't going to stop him, you know, unless it's backed up by, you know, police force and enforcement.
Right. That you know, it's just, it's a sad situation. I was reading something that I think I don't know who this person is, but I think it's Representative Lawrence Lockman of Maine, and he says, if a woman has a right to an abortion, why shouldn't a man be free to use his superior strength to force himself on a woman? That is
I know exactly the SOB you're talking about.
That is so sad for him to say something like that. So that's just like opening the floodgates to pedophiles and the likes of them, because if you're telling a man, if a woman has an abortion, it's okay for you to rape her, you know, what kind of, that has nothing to do with an abortion, you know, and I'm against abortions, don't get it wrong. But that has nothing to do, if a woman has an abortion, maybe she had her reasons, you know, but, and then to say, okay, you had an abortion, so now you have the right to be raped. That is crazy.
Yeah, and I would really encourage everyone listening to check out the representatives in your area, the senators and the representatives. Check their voting records before you go to vote. You know, don't be taken in by campaign slogans or image. You know, go on the internet, read the newspapers, and check their records on those things, because these are the people that are supposed to be protecting you. And if you have somebody like that, the person you just spoke of in office, you know, then you're in danger, you know, I mean.
Yes, you are. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Gail Delicious Johnson. I'm more than just a radio personality. I'm also a best-selling author of 5 published books, publisher, ghostwriter, poet, and a speaker. My latest book, a fast-paced, action-packed, drama-filled novel titled Back to Zero, is available. You can order your autographed copy of Back to Zero and any of my other books from my website. That's www.jjpublishing.com. If you're looking to have your dreams come true in a book, look no further. I am the founder and owner of my own independent publishing company, JJ Publishing. JJ Publishing offers the service to fit the new or seasoned author's budget. There are no hidden fees. I display a professional business attitude towards my clients while treating them with dignity and respect. My mission is to make the first-time author as well as a seasoned author's use of JJ Publishing service a most beneficial and memorable experience. Back to Zero is selling out fast. Don't be left out. Go to my website. Again, that address is www.jjpublishing.com. After you make your purchases, check out my website. I thank you all in advance.
We recorded this song on October the 6th. Since then, the war has been declared over. If you're like me, you'll remember it like anybody remembers any war. One big drag. A lot of people write songs about wars and government, various social things. But I think about young guys who were like I was when I was young. I had no more idea about any government or political things or anything. And I think about those kind of young guys now who all of a sudden somebody comes up and they're very law-abiding. So if somebody says go, they don't ask any questions, they just go. And I can remember not too long ago seeing a young guy with his right arm gone. Just got back. And I asked him how he was doing. He said he was doing all right now, but he had thought he was going to die. He said getting shot at didn't bother him. It was getting shot that shook him up. And I tried to put myself in his position. Maybe he cried. Maybe he said, I can't write left-handed. Would you please write a letter? Write a letter to my mother. Tell her to tell, tell her to tell, tell her to tell her family lawyer. Trying to get a deferment for my younger brother. Tell the Reverend Harris to pray for me, Lord, Lord, Lord. I don't believe I'm gonna live to get much older. Strange little man over here in Vietnam. I ain't never seen. Bless his heart, I ain't never done nothing to. He done shot me in my shoulder. You know we talked about fighting, fighting every day. And looking through rosy and rosy colored glasses. I must admit it seemed exciting. In a way, yeah, but something that they overlooked to tell me, no. Bullets look better, I must say. At away. And please call up the Reverend, call up the Reverend Harris. And tell him to ask the Lord to do some good things for me. Tell him I ain't gonna live and get much older. Shot me in my shoulder.
Thank you. All right, that was Bill Withers. I can't write left-handed. If you listen to the lyrics to that song, you'll get it. Anyway, we're here this evening with our two special guests, Megan Husey and Shakara. And Megan is a feminist erotic author and journalist, and she also is an activist on behalf of abused women. And her and Shakara did a book together, Two for the Triton, and Shakara is also an energy practitioner. We're going to get into talking with her about that because my guest co-host is very into energy, so we'll get to her in a second. And also, I want to bring in my other co-host, Rhea. Good evening, Rhea, darling. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. We have Megan and Shakara and Jade on the line.
Oh, hi, Megan, Shakara,
hi.
And Jade.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. Thank you.
Yes, yes. So, Megan, we covered domestic violence and, you know, the source. So you've written based fantasy romances for companies like Class Act Books and Phase Books, Excite Books, and, you know, the likes. How did you get to write for those companies, and what was the rewards behind writing with them, and, you know, how many books did you write for these different companies? And also, how did you get involved with the Playgirl and Good Vibrations? Because I know those are definitely erotic-type companies there. Erotic-type, yeah.
Yes. Yes. And, well, I always, you know, ever since college, I have had an interest in erotic romance, and also was, you know, a proud Playgirl reader. And, you know, and so in a way, you know, I really liked the books that I read and some of the films that I saw and everything. But again, I wanted to do something a little different. You know, I wanted to do something that was positive for women. In my book, I like to show women of different body types. You know, not everybody is a size 2. I like to show women of different careers and professions and races, nationalities. And, you know, so it was just very important to me to promote positivity and diversity and to have very strong heroines, of course. And you probably couldn't imagine me writing a weak heroine. You know, and, yeah. You know, so as far as getting involved with the companies, I think that, well, I actually my first sweet romance, Jingle Bell Romance, was published in 2005 through Publish America. And then it was about that time that I got involved with Playgirl. I headed up the Playgirl Posse, which was the Playgirl fan club, and I started writing for Good Vibes. And right now I'm writing for Scandalous Women magazine and Pool Boy, magazine. And through these connections, especially with Playgirl, I got to know a lot of erotica authors. And they were really interested. You know, they read some of my columns and some of the erotic fantasies that I wrote. And, excuse me, they asked me if I wrote full books. You know, and I said, well, I certainly can, you know. It's like, let me get on it, you know. And so I think that my first erotic novella was published in 2006, and I just never stopped after that.
And what was the title of that book?
Let's see, I think the very first, well, there were a couple. My book, A Good Catch, which is a merman book that's available through Class Act. It was one of the first ones published. And also I had a novella called Kissing the Barney Stone in Irish Intimacies and Ironies, which is available through Melange. And then I started my Nui series through Faze, which is a vampire. And, yeah, so I think right now I've got about 30 titles in print.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Well,
okay,
thank
so
you.
Last year you wrote a book, Blooming Love, and that's the concern, the topic of domestic violence. What was the premises of this book, and who were the characters in the book?
Yes, well, Blooming Love was very important to me because I had gotten a lot of, well, I tell you, it was a very magical few months last year when all this started transpiring because I had been getting some offers to write erotica that was just horrible. I mean, companies were approaching me, asking me to write like rape scenarios, gangbangs, you know, sex with aliens, and I mean, just really, really weird, terrible, terrible stuff that was just more nightmarish to me than erotic. And so two things happened right in a row. First of all, I was working with, Blooming Love was published through Rhetorical Ratatouille Publishing Company. And my editor there is a wonderful man named Yvonne Goodard. And I think he got sick of hearing me complain about all the bad erotica before asking me to write. And so he said, well, why don't you just write a sweet feminist romance? You know, and so that's why I wrote Blooming Love. And the lead, the heroine of Blooming Love is actually the head of a domestic violence shelter. And so she, too, you know, has dedicated her life, you know, in the story to this cause. And the hero is a handsome millionaire, and I like to think of him as the nice, if you took Christian Grey and if you made him a decent person and nice and civil, and this would be my character because he's a handsome millionaire, you know, but he's also very loving and caring. And so he actually has an ex-girlfriend who was the victim of a date rape, and so he's very aware of this issue. And so basically, you know, he wants to acknowledge Diana's efforts. The heroine's name is Diana. He wants to acknowledge her efforts in this area. And so he gives her a special award. And that's how they meet. And so, yeah, I'm very proud of the book because it's very sweet and romantic, but I think it also has a powerful message, you know. And so it was right around that time, too, that I came into contact with my long-lost sister from another mother, Sakara, and when she started Metaphysical Erotica. And that's when I really got the opportunity to do some very wonderful, very woman-positive, you know, human-positive erotica. So,
right. So you and Sakara had hooked up and got together, and both of you co-wrote this book, too, for Trenton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sakara, tell me in the listener audience and my co-host just what Two for Trenton is about.
Well, Megan and I started writing a series in the metaphysical erotica lineage called Mythrotica's, And Mithradikas really take a look at the ancient myths of the world. And we take these famous figures and humanize them and bring awareness into their consciousness by having them go through experiences that are wrapped around a central theme. And so that's really allowed us to be able to support the rise of the feminine power in the world, because a lot of these goddesses are getting an opportunity to speak their mind. So Two for Triton was a special project that we did for 1 Billion Rising, and it's really to support women who are in abusive situations and who are disconnected physically from their body and emotionally from their heart. And it's just a very lighthearted story to show that there could be a mythical figure who could be very adoring and respectful and loving towards the feminine characters. And so that's been part of our contribution, part of our positive input back into the world to help women who are going through difficult times feel good when they read this.
Okay. How much, if any, research you had to do before you wrote this book, before you two got together and wrote this book? Was any type of research you had to do to bring these mythical figures to life, you know, knowing the history of them and, you know, different things like that? Was there any research that you did before you did write the book?
Definitely. How we really write these Mithradikas is that we actually take the existing stories and take these same stories and usually modernize a lot of the concepts and the discussions and the perspectives that these Greek gods and goddesses and these other gods and goddesses share. In this particular context of Two for Triton, Megan actually has a soft spot for mermen. She's experienced quite a lot of exposure writing mermen. And for me, because I'm such a creative person, I just was like, sure, why not? Let's try it. Mermen, men with fins. I mean, I'm sure some women find that hot.
Wow, that is really something. So Triton is a merman.
Right, Triton is actually the son of Poseidon, who is the Greek god of the seas.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a lot of ways, Triton is representative as a steward of the seas. And the character, the two heroines in these two stories are also very strong women. In Megan's story, she has a sea captain who is a protector of animals and tries to, and actually saves Triton. And in my story, my heroine is an artist who depicts the underworld, the underwater world, through her collages, through these big art pieces. And what it's really trying to do for our audience is twofold, and one way it's to bring the sensuality of this this environment, and also at the second time, it's to show that how we treat our waters, how we treat our environment is very reflective of how we treat one another, because it's really up to us to have the responsibility to take care of our world, not only our internal world, our heart, but also our external world. And as an energy practitioner, one thing that I find very appealing about this particular book is that we write about water, and we talk about the sensuality of water. And water is a very powerful substance in our world. I mean, we as human beings are made of 80% water. And when we look at the properties of water as a malleable molecule that can absorb the intentions of whatever you attach to it, well, our overall intentions for writing Two for Triton was to create this vibration of support, empowerment, self-love, for women out there in the world who are going through a difficult time, whether it be in abusive situations or neglect or abandonment. You know, that's something that I feel Megan and I are doing differently in the world of erotica. There's a lot of commercial erotica that talks about disempowering women, utilizing women as a, quote, tool for the man's pleasure. And we're really coming in to raise the vibration of a commercial erotica and kind of reflect the psychology of where women are in the world right now. Women are gaining power not only within themselves, but in the political, financial, social, entertainment arena. And I feel like we need to have literature that reflects that and not just, you know, continue the amount of smut that keeps women tied to some idea of not being, you know, conscious, co-creative parts of this world.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're an energy practitioner. How long have you been an energy practitioner, and what geared you to that particular career?
I have been a nurse for over 15 years, and I've been an energy worker since about 2007. And so what I've really seen is that the perfect medicine is not just one form of medicine. It's not just looking at the human body and saying, here is a pill to fix you. When I look at working with the body as an energetic system, we're looking at the body as a physical, emotional, mental, energetic, and spiritual being. And so when we write this type of erotica, when people read these works, it's actually affecting them on a multisensorial level. It's actually increasing the frequency of their bodies. And energy work came into my life because I was in a place where I really needed some guidance. I really needed some clarity. I was in the end of my marriage, and it was the light at the end of the tunnel that made everything clear. It made myself more accepting of my situation, allowed me to live in a world where everything wasn't so personally involved. It helped me detach and to be able to see the bigger picture. And how that came into my world with metaphysical erotica is I work in this field known as Akashic Records. And the Akashic Records is basically the book of life. And it's a big library which holds the book of life for all souls. And so when a project occurs, when a soul is conceived in this realm, when a business is created, when a thought comes through, when a feeling is initiated, there is an actual record that is being created at every moment of a person's experience. And so working with the records, working with energy and bringing that into erotica is, in my opinion, an evolution because it bridges self-help with sexuality, which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
Energy healer? When you say energy worker, are you an energy healer?
You know, that's a funny thing with the word heal. Healing and a healer, because that is implying that it is being placed on someone to give, quote, healing to another. And what I actually feel like I do is I'm more of an assistant. I assist people in allowing their fields to open and allowing their bodies to work with a higher vibration, namely the creators. So if anything, the healer is actually the clients that I work with. It is just simply me witnessing that occurrence in their bodies for that to take place. And, you know, my type of energy work deals with organs. It deals with the DNA. It deals with the fields of the body. And it deals with people's lineages and their soul purpose and their divine reason for being here. So oftentimes it's just helping people realize that they actually have that power to heal themselves, and sometimes they just need a little bit of guidance.
So that's basically where you come in at. You give them the information, you know, how to go about doing it, or do you give them some type of, you give them some type of aid, maybe some herbs or
it's
something like that.
Or direction on
Yeah, it's a bit of both. When I'm actually doing hands-on healing or hands-on energy work with someone, this is an opportunity where we actually get to work with their cellular DNA. We're talking about the cells of their organs down to the nucleus, which creates the DNA. And what happens is we're actually pulling out memories, thoughts, feelings, experiences, traumas that people lock into parts of their bodies. So in Chinese medicine, let's say you might store anger in your liver or stress and powerlessness in your stomach and adrenals or fear in your kidneys. In this type of energy work that I work with, I'm assisting another person in being able to completely open their field, and we start to take out the energetic resonance of certain experiences. So at the end of the night, when their body is in downtime and they're recreating new cells, new tissues, new organs, that vibration is no longer there. So throughout time, as you peel back the layers like an onion, eventually you get to the core of the situation. You find out that, you know, a lot of the core issues that human beings face are really through feeling abandoned by the Creator, not feeling worthy, not feeling enough. Those real core issues kind of run as concurrent streams of paradigms in our world right now. And so on a hands-on level, I help people be able to move through that. On an energetic level, when we work with the Akashic Records, I help give people options and choices. Like, for instance, the three questions that I get asked the most when working in the records all revolve around money, health, and love. And so when people ask questions, for instance, related to love, their question might be, why is this person in my life? Why is this person in my life? Why do I have this relationship? In essence, the question they're asking is, what is it that I do that recreates these patterns that keeps drawing back these certain relationships back into my life? What is the true lesson that I need to learn? And so based on certain questions, innumerable options are given. And what happens is it gives people choices. It gives them a sense of power back into their lives, because we honestly can't see more than, you know, 10 minutes in front of us, or even 5 minutes in front of us, how our future is unfolding. So it's really kind of more of a guidance tool, if anything.
But it still sounds like you are doing some type of healing, because you are doing away with some of that energetic residue that causes them to be
stuck, even
if it's in their kidneys or somewhere in there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So great.
So how does that work? Do you have them to come in and they're laid out on a bed or laid down? How does that actually work? Do you put hands on them?
Usually when I am working on a one-to-one basis, I usually prefer to have people laid out on a massage table, and I have certain tools for if you all are familiar with chakras or power centers, these are tools that help open up our power centers even more. If I can't do a hands-on person-to-person type of experience, then a lot of the sessions that I do, actually more than 90% of sessions that I do end up doing, are remotely. So those happen either through Skype or through the phone. The real beautiful thing about being able to do energy work is the realization that I'm not the one doing the work. I simply step aside, and I invoke in the Creator, our Divine Mother, the energy of the earth. I invite people's masters, teachers, loved ones, angels, guides. And what a lot of people don't realize is they walk around in this world completely supported by what is called a council or a soul council. Everyone has connected to them, their guardian angels, you know, all the beings that support them in this life. And if more people were aware of that, I think they would ask for more help. I mean, these beings are seriously waiting for us to just go, hey, guys, could you really help me with this? And that would give maybe a little more peace to people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
That's heavy.
Yeah, and that's what I like is that you're educating that, because a lot of times people don't realize that they do have, like, a guardian angel that's assigned to them, or they mm-hmm. there is some type of spirit or entity that can help them, that's there to help, that they can reach out to for help. And some people are fearful of that, or because they don't understand the unknown, they feel like, I don't want to talk or reach, you know, they're worried about opening some type of door, a demonic door or something that we try to explain. As spiritualists, as long as you're calling out to the good entity, the good angel of light, you're good, you know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that's great that you educate on that as well.
Right. And, you know, in all honesty, that's how the books were written. That's how one of the series, the metaphysical erotica books, were written. It wasn't my intention to write books on sex. As a matter of fact, I wasn't even a writer. I mean, I wrote music because I played in a band, but writing like a complete novel was never on my horizon. It wasn't one of those things that I wanted to say, okay, I've done that on my bucket list. But what happened was I was in meditation, and I asked the Divine Mother, who I work very closely with, a certain lineage of the Mother, I said, what can I do to serve you? And I asked and I waited, and then 2 weeks later, this assignment fell in my lap, and I was like, you want me to write about sex? Are you sure? Can I write about anything else? Like, I don't know, save the whales, save the humans? Instead, that was what I was given.
Wow. That is really something. And I do believe that each person is given a guardian angel, because I've been in situations where I know that something, well, I'm going to say my guardian angel was there for me, you know, and I do also believe in the evil spirits as well, but I'm more or less geared to my guardian angel, you know, so... you know, if people would understand that, as Jade has said, then maybe it would be, you know, easier for people to go through life opposed to always being afraid to open this door. But when you open that door, it's the wrong door. You see what I'm saying? So I do believe, you know, in, you know, what you're speaking of, you know, and as far as the energy and all that, those sorts of things. I'm learning a lot about that, you know, but I wasn't really into it to the point of knowing how it worked, because I know that different people work it differently, you know, because, you know, how you speak of it is a different way when I heard someone else speaking of it. But I'm quite sure that when it all comes together, it serves the same purpose. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think also that it's very circular, because I think that we write these books to heal, but then we can also do, you know, fundraisers like Two for Triton, and like I did kind of with Blooming Love, you know. And so, yes, you know, the healing is multi-level, and it affects us, and it affects our readers and our friends.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back shortly.
I was just thinking what we need. I said what we need for you to do. Put your arms around us. Look us in the eye. Forget about your ego. And don't be afraid to let us know just how vulnerable you are. And you can accomplish all of this. All of this. By simply saying to us, from the bottom of your heart, day after day, I face a world of strangers where I don't belong. I'm not that strong.
was Gladys Knight, and I'm telling you, a rendition by Jennifer Holliday, but I just got to say, nobody can sing that song like Jennifer Holliday. All righty, we're back, and my other co-host is on the line, Jay Dino. Jay Dino, we're on the line with Megan and Shakara. Megan Hussey is a feminist erotic author and a journalist who is an activist on behalf of abused women, and she and Shakara co-wrote a book, Two for Triting, and they donated half of all the proceeds to the V-Day on 1 Billion Rising efforts to help abused women. And Shakara is an energy practitioner, and we were diving into the different areas of how she does her energy practice and, you know, getting into that. So if you have any questions or comments, the listener audience out there, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877, and I was in such a big rush tonight because I was over on another colleague's Blog Talk Radio show. I forgot to open the chat room, so forgive me for that. For anybody who came by and wanted to stop in the chat room, sorry, but, you know, if you're out there listening, it's just as good. Now, getting back to these two phenomenal women who co-wrote a book and who are activists and energy practitioner. Megan, are you in any way involved in energy practitioner as well?
Well, you know, Shakara has taught me so much, you know, because I had always had an interest in it, and it was always something that I wanted to learn more about, you know, just about especially healing energies. And I actually, I did some PR for a friend of mine who was an herbalist and a paranormal investigator a few years ago. And especially my friendship with Shakara and partnership has just opened my eyes, you know, to the possibilities. And, you know, and especially just as I write and as we do this research and writing, I can just feel the energy flow through me, you know, as I write. And it's very healing for me and for the readers. And so I have a lot to learn, you know, especially compared to her. But she's been a wonderful mentor in that area.
Okay, are you both from the same city or state, or you live in different cities or states?
Well, I live in the Tampa Bay area of Florida, and Shakara lives in Texas.
Oh, okay, so you guys came together like that. Oh, okay. That's really something, because I had a couple of guests on my show who co-wrote John Holmes' book, and one of them lived in California, and the other one lived in, I forgot where the other one lived, but they actually, you know, co-wrote the book via the internet and, you know, doing research and this and that. And it's a wonderful book. You know, I read the book, and, you know, how they put it together was very phenomenal. Is that how you ladies did it, through the internet and, you know, your research and all that, and
right,
exchanging things through the internet?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Isn't the internet wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes projects like this possible, and it connects you up with people that you never would have known otherwise.
Right. That is true. And, you know, it's just, you know, wonderful that this technology has come along at a time that it has, you know, connecting people in a way that they never thought you could even be connected to people, because I have friends everywhere on the internet. And some of the friends that I have on the internet I've actually met. When I was in Kentucky, I met quite a few people. Pennsylvania, you know, different places I've gone, I've met some of my friends that are on Facebook, you know, a lot of the friends that I have right here in the DMV where I live at. And, you know, I have you know, quite a few of my family members are on there as well. And I even hooked up with an old girlfriend of mine who used to live here, and she had went back to Connecticut. And how I found her again was because I put in her daughter's name on Facebook, and I hooked back up with her. And I did it at the right time because her daughter got married, and I would have never found my girlfriend again because, I, you know, I wouldn't have known her daughter's married name. So, yeah, Facebook is pretty good. Mark Zuckerberg did do something when he was in his college dorm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that Jade had a question and she wanted to ask you, Shakara. Jade?
I wanted to ask the energy. I want to say energy healer so bad, but that is what you're doing. But
yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Wanted to ask, when you are performing energy work, because I dabble in study on orgasmic meditation and energetic orgasm.
And I
know that when you clear certain pathways within your energy and your chakras, that it does open more energy to flow and allowing you to have a mind, body, and soul orgasmic experience where you can have a full body orgasm. Do you ever, when you're doing your energy work, when you're cleansing someone in maybe their kidneys or whatever their areas are on a sacral chakra, where it kind of encourages them to have an orgasm if they've maybe had that kind of blockage in their past through some type of sexual trauma?
It definitely assists. I've worked with innumerable number of people who've experienced traumas, and you know where they store that in their bodies is in their close to their root chakra area where they store fear. And when you're having a lot of fear, especially that comes from negative experiences, oftentimes it doesn't allow you to open up your body. And so there's not a feeling of safety that gets created. And so when I work with people, especially in the lower chakras, you know, we're really trying to create a place where you can pull out the energetic resonance of an experience, say like rape or abuse. And the thing is that experience may never actually leave your memory, but what does change is the charge that it controls over you. So as we pull out those energetic charges and those different layers, eventually what happens is you look back in your life and you're like, oh, yes, that really terrible experience occurred to me. However, I have surmounted that. It no longer holds me because it's no longer a part of my DNA, my cellular 12-strand DNA. And now I can actually trust that I am with a partner who can help my body feel safe and who can help my body open so I can receive pleasure, so I can receive sensations. And as you move up to the upper chakras, like once you start working on your power centers, like your second chakra, this is actually the seat of power, sexual power for women. And they hold this actually in their womb space. And in their womb, in their uterus, that's where some of the deepest traumas are embedded in your cells. And so when you can work to actually pull those out, and when I've pulled things out of people's bodies, it's not just an energetic feeling. I have pulled out and seen, you know, through, say, my third eye vision, through a different vision, I've pulled out glass. I've pulled out sharp metallic tools. I've pulled out, you know, globs of weird-looking creatures and what looks like poison out of people's organs and bodies. And these are energetic holograms, if you will, illusions of what our experiences and our minds and our feelings have created and continue to keep in those places in our bodies. And so when we pull those things out, I mean, we're talking about recreating a new human being. It's a way of shifting the paradigm. And so it's absolutely healing for a woman who wants to be in her sexual power. And I'm familiar with the orgasmic meditation community. You're talking about the OM community, right?
No, I am familiar with the OM as well. But, the orgasmic meditation through meditating and really connecting your
energies and your chakras to get to the elevation of the orgasmic energy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, that community, I know quite a few people who are part of that community. It doesn't necessarily resonate for me. I feel like there's something that's lacking, a little bit of a deeper connection. And if you're not familiar with what the OM community is, for those who are your listeners, this community is kind of an empowering community for women, where they have strokers, men who basically undergo a clitoral massage or stimulation of their women, and when the woman is able to surrender, relax, and achieve an orgasm, then, you know, by witnessing her, the man also receives his own level of healing, his own level of activation as well. Personally, for me, I've never been drawn to it. I feel like I want a little bit more of an intimate, deeper connection.
Absolutely.
With
but this
partner.
One is not through touch. So, you know, it does play a part with Tantra. And then there is some that Tantra is not involved. But, no, and I do know someone who does OM. And does practice that, and I have seen in his videos that he really, like, the lady is like on cloud nine. She looks like has taken some medicine or some happy pills or something after he's done his work. But I would not want, in practicing any energy healing, whether it be through orgasmic meditation or educating on that level, I would not want to have that kind of connection with someone, because some people are not comfortable with you physically touching them in the physical, but
right.
Will open up to you touching them from an energetic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, as far as Jay, you were speaking of not being touched, you know, having an orgasm from the just the hands on, or just the
without hands on. I mean, the mind is the most powerful organ in the body, you know.
Right.
So if you open yourself up to it, and you play around with it, the party that you're experiencing it with, they can start to feel sexually aroused and start to feel elevated. They can actually feel you and feel your energy, and they can be across the world somewhere. So if you're doing it right, they're open to it, it can happen.
That sounds to me a bit like hypnotism, you know, because it's coming through your mind, and you would have to be so relaxed.
Well, you both can meditate. You both can be at a meditative state when it's being done.
Mm-hmm.
Or as one of your guests had mentioned something about Skype, it can happen through Skype. It can happen on the telephone. It's just transferring and transmuting energy, and just knowing how to do it, and that person also being able to receive it. So. That's really what's important when you're doing that.
Right. Well, is this person speaking anything to you, saying anything to you? Because I know, I not to say that it can't be done, but, you know, for somebody to be, say, in California and I'm here in Maryland and we're on the phone, you know, something would have to be being said, because how is my attention going to be drawn to?
I actually did a meditative piece with someone, and I never really shared that with anyone, but I actually did a meditative piece with someone. We could
mm-hmm.
feel the arousal, the stimulation, just from
so
afar.
So nothing was said between you guys.
So
you just
at
was
the
like...
end of the session, we both kind of matched notes up, if you will, like, you know, this is what was happening on my end, this is what I was feeling, okay, well, this is what I was thinking when I was doing it, so as I was meditating, this is what I was projecting. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds quite interesting because, you know, I'm just thinking that if I'm, you know, like I was, you know, about to say, if I'm here in Maryland, someone in California, something, now this is just me, something would have to first put that thought in my mind if we're going to have, if he's there to make me have an orgasm, you know, it's got to be something that he would have to, like, turn that switch on. But, you know, like you had said, you went through it, and, you know, y'all compared notes at the end. But this is just how I'm thinking, because I've never did it, you know, with anybody in California or, you know, while I was here, right. Not unless it was phone sex, but, you know.
verbal touching.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, just the meditation.
Well,
I'm going to
just
thing.
Add this because I don't want to take away from the ladies' time, but I will add this. You know how sometimes if you suddenly think of someone and you call them and they were like, damn, if I wasn't thinking about you, you were on my mind. And I was talking to somebody about you, and I talked you up because you called me, and it'd be out of nowhere. I can be thinking about you in a meditative state, and it'd be real strong and powerful, and I'm projecting just something. And you could be doing something like typing and writing your book, and you might stop and pause and be like, I feel funny. Something's weird. And then you'll just go on and continue with writing. Somebody's thinking about you hard in some kind of way, or something is going on with something. So either you're heavy on someone's mind or something's going on. And that's kind of how that energetic feel kind of takes place with that communication, that kind of transferring and transmuting energy. And, you know, your guest can enlighten us and kind of fill us in if she wants to. But that's kind of how it starts when you are being open to the person that's distributing it as you're receiving it. You know it's about to happen, so your thoughts is whatever your expectation is, and then you're opened up to it. So you're really opening yourself up to it. And then so whatever their intentions are and the energy points that they want to touch, it actually is going to happen if they're really good at doing it and know really how to project that energy and push it out there to you. So that's what's fabulous about it.
Yes. And I think also, you know, that with today's women, we have a number of options. I very openly and strongly advocate that if a woman is in need of some sort, because, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of women that end up being damaged in their sexuality, sometimes to the point where they just can't enjoy it anymore.
Absolutely.
Yes, because if they've been molested, if they've been raped, you know, if they've been, you know, I mean, even my stalking experiences had an effect, you know, on my sexuality for a while. And, anything that happens to you emotionally or physically can take a toll. And I very openly advocate for women to be completely unashamed and doing whatever they have to reclaim their sexuality. And this could take the form of reading erotica or looking at magazines or watching films, or if they want to, you know, go to a male strip show, see a male companion, you know, I mean, or if they want to seek the services of a sexual surrogate, you know, or counselor, you know. There are so many options, you know, just to mention phone sex, you know, that's another possibility. And, you know, I'm more than happy to share my knowledge and resources in that area because, you know, I just think it's time that women, you know, we have been slut-shamed so much, we have been made to feel ashamed of our sexuality to the point that we can't heal and we can't seek pleasure, you know, no matter what our life situation. And so, you know, it's really time that we claimed our sexuality in whatever form we choose.
And nothing hurts worse to be with a man who doesn't understand and won't help you to grow, you know, into your sexuality, a man who is selfish and a man who doesn't care, you know. And, you know, it's really sad how some women shut down, and then when they shut down, their partner can't understand why. You know, you calling me fat, you're calling me ugly, you're saying this about me, saying that about me. So, you know, what do you want from me? There's nothing I can do for you, you know. So the sex goes away with that as well. And I think men should be more caring and understanding when their woman or their girlfriend comes to them and tells them that they've been molested or they've been raped, instead of telling her, well, maybe it was your fault. You know, no woman is at fault to be raped or molested. I don't care if she walks down the street naked. A man does not have the right to put his hands on her or force himself upon her for no reason. But these are some of the reasons why women shut down. Even sometimes when they get out of abusive relationships, you know, they don't take the time to give themselves time to, you know, get in love and fall in love with themselves. They get involved in other relationships, and they're just like the relationship they just got out of, you know, because sometimes you have to do a reevaluation on your life. You have to step back and start loving yourself. You know, start caring about yourself and stop looking for love in all the wrong places. You know, and that's the problem with a lot of these women. They get out of an abusive relationship, and all they're looking for is for someone to love them, not giving themselves the time to rebuild themselves, to love themselves, to, you know, understand what was going on. They get right back into another bad relationship. So I'm saying all that to say that once you get out of a relationship, there's nothing wrong with being by yourself. There's nothing wrong with loving yourself and caring for yourself and looking out for yourself and being more concerned about yourself. The first law of nature is self-preservation. And if you don't look out for yourself, nobody else will, not the way that you need to and that you should. Because I've been in abusive relationships. I've been molested. I've been raped. And it took me years to get over it. The things that I did to myself, you know, I abused myself. You know, I became a drug addict. And I shut down once I got raped. I shut down from being sexually active. And then when I did become sexually active, it was like I just was just going for it, you know. But those were things that I was doing to hide the fact and to get over the fact of what had happened to me, you know. But once I got to the point of, you know, loving myself, caring for myself and understanding what had actually happened to me when I was 15 years old was when I sort of like went through this whole metamorphosis, you know, just changing up, you know, loving myself and doing things for myself. So, you know, you don't always have to beat yourself up and hate yourself and, you know, feel sorry for yourself and loaf over things that happened to you in the past, you know. And I didn't really know how to come out of it because I had suppressed it. You know, I had suppressed it for years. And when I did come out of it was because the three of my girlfriends had actually been raped by their biological fathers. So that's what had started me, had opened me up to start talking about what had happened to me, because I had put it so far in the back of my mind until, you know, it was like it had never happened. But it was something that I never forgot. I never forgot it. And I actually just forgave the guy for raping me maybe within the last 5 years. I just, you know, because you have to let go of that anger. You have to let go of that frustration and that bitterness, because if you don't, it will eat you alive. So I wanted all kind of things to happen to him. I just, you know, so once I forgave him, all that stuff just went away. And it's, you know, it's something that I can talk about with people. And I, you know, every chance I get, I speak to women that, you know, have been through what I went through. I found out the other day that a girlfriend of mine went out on a date, and she got date raped. She never told anybody about it. Never. And she said she felt like she didn't want to tell anybody because she had went out on a date with this guy. I said, well, that still is not a reason or an excuse for him to rape you. But she, you know, she had explained that to me the other day. And it's a lot of women who have been raped over and over and over and don't even say anything about it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, what I always tell survivors that I come in contact with is that far from being ashamed, you should be so proud of yourself, you know, because you survived the unthinkable. You had a brute yes, you had a brute strength that so many people don't have, and you just survived and you thrived, and that is just beautiful. You are a goddess. You're a queen, you know, and so far from being ashamed of what happened, it was not your fault. You should not feel one bit of shame. It was not your fault, you know.
Right.
And the more that you embrace the strength that it took to survive that, then the more that you can go on, you know, because to me, a survivor of domestic or sexual violence is a heroine, you know, and just somebody who, with superhuman strength.
Right. But see, that this is how they do. They try to make, they try to turn it on you, because when I went to court, the lawyer was trying to make it seem like it was my fault. What was you wearing? Did he ejaculate on you? Did you know him? You know, asking me all these questions that was so, it made me feel worse when I went to court than the fact, it was just like I was being raped all over again. But thank God that they found him guilty of it, and he did get the Youth Act, which he only served 5 years for it. But, you know, because he was 17, I was 15. And he got the Youth Act. That's when they had started Youth Act back in the 60s. And he did 5 years. And it's so, this story doesn't really end there. The person, the girl who was with me this particular night, as the years went by, like I said, I hadn't seen him. I got, well, I had, the next time I saw him, I was like in my 40s. And a girlfriend of mine who we were at a reunion, he was there. And I didn't even know it was him that she was talking to. To make a long story short, the two of them got into a relationship. And they were in a relationship for 17 years. And I asked her, you know, what's that all about? And I said, do you ever talk about what he did to me? Because she went to court with me as a witness, as one of my witnesses. And she said he had told her that he was young, he made a mistake, and, you know, he had apologized. He never apologized to me. But she was in a relationship for him 17 years, and he raped her, sodomized her, abused her, you know, did just about any and everything he wanted to do to her. She died this January past. But I'm saying all that to say that a rapist to me should be on the same level as someone who kills somebody. They need to be put in jail and never, never set free. Because as long as that victim carries those scars and those wounds from that rapist, which will be a lifetime, because I've never forgotten it and I never will. So therefore, he should be locked up the entire time. So,
yes,
you know,
and you know, and, yes, and I believe too that a sexual assault is every bit as bad as murder, you know, because it's just like a friend of mine whose mother was raped. The way that she put it was, when you kill somebody, that's horrible. At least they don't feel the pain anymore after the death, but with a rape victim, they do. They feel it for the rest of their lives. So in a way, it's even. In a way, it's even worse. You know, and it is, that is so true. And the attitudes that people have, I mean, like, you know, with me, with my stalking experiences, I've heard so much BS that just makes me furious. You know, it's like, oh, do they know that you write erotica? You know, you've got blonde hair and you're too pretty and you're, oh, well, I'm so sorry. God, you know, I mean, it's like, just so much BS that has nothing to do with anything. That people try to pin it on you. You know, it's like in those countries where they force women to cover up completely so that the men won't be tempted. Well, we have the same mentality over here to a certain extent, because if you're sexually assaulted, if you're stalked, then, well, maybe you shouldn't have done this. Maybe you shouldn't look this way. Maybe you shouldn't write this. Maybe you shouldn't, you know. And it's just infuriating because that has nothing to do with it.
Right. It's just an excuse. It's just an excuse. And, you know, like that the guy who says the thing about if a woman has a right to an abortion, why shouldn't a man be free to use his superior strength to force himself on a woman? Now, it's men like that that put all these thoughts in other men's heads, and before you know it, they're going to legalize rape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that's
going to
be so scary, you know. It's going to be very scary anytime you can't go out your door without, you know, a man following you or even coming into your home and raping you and just going about his business. It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and in a way, even though we have laws in place, there are so many stupid, you know, statutory options and loopholes and ways to get around, and also casting doubt on the victim and their history and their reputation, and it is scary, and it's just something that we have to keep on and that we have to reform. And one of the things that I always say is that one time I actually had an elder of a church that my friend attended say that he thought that women who dressed suggestively, that they encouraged rape, you know. And I said,
"That's crazy."
And I said, "Do you realize that children are raped? Do you realize that 85-year-old women get raped? Do you realize that men get raped in prison?" And I said, "Have you ever seen a 5-year-old boy walking around in a Micro Mini and spiked heels? You know, have you ever seen an 80, you know, have you ever seen an 85-year-old woman walking around in red hot pants, you know, those light hot pants and a tank top, you know? You wouldn't want to see that, would you, you know?" And so, and he was like, and I said, "You know, anybody can be raped. Any age, you know, any," and I said, "dress has absolutely nothing to do with it." And, you know, it's just so stupid.
Well, what about this guy who got away with raping his 3-year-old daughter, and the judge said he wouldn't fare well in prison?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's terrible.
He's a millionaire. He's a millionaire and heir to, what is it, some fortune, but he raped his 3-year-old daughter, and the judge said, put him on probation, said because he wouldn't fare well in jail. No, he needs to be castrated physically, mentally, and put under the jail, raping a 3-year-old baby.
Yes,
but, you know,
that,
money
yes,
talks.
Oh, that's horrible. Yes, I mean, this victim is a
it was a female judge.
That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So
talk about money talking. There's at least one director in the adult industry that young women run screaming from his sets because of the abuse that they've endured. But he also happens to be a very high level executive in another industry, and so nothing is being done about it. And you know. So that's the kind of thing that we're really mobilizing, you know, as an adult industry member, that we're mobilizing, identifying these people and getting their names out there, and, you know, because we're not going to put up with it anymore.
Right, right. And I think sometimes, and let me ask you, do you ever have an issue where some of the victims, the rape victims, actually protect their rapists? Because I just seen something today that really troubled me, where a gentleman was so upset, his girlfriend, who was getting raped by her grandfather, had explained to him how her grandfather had threatened her and had ultimately told her, when she told her boyfriend about it and he confronted him, that her daughter was next. So he confronted him and wanted to fight him. He was so upset. You know, he's like, "I'm trying to protect my girlfriend here." Well, she was fighting him tooth and nail not to confront her grandfather. And she was mad with him. Like, she would not speak to him. She was upset because she felt like the family now was disowning her because of her sharing her experience with her boyfriend, who was trying to fight for her and stand up for her and approach him for her on her behalf. So she actually was defending her grandfather.
Mm.
And
wow.
I noticed that there are some women out there who have been through it so much and so long with their rapists that sometimes that is an issue for them. If they're a sibling, they don't want nothing to happen because they feel like, you know, if I tell, something's going to happen to my younger sibling or whatever. So they become the bait and allow themselves to just be there for. And I think that that's also a problem that we need to kind of help these women with as well.
Yes, that's an excellent point. And I believe that, I don't know if you ever heard of a phenomena called the Stockholm Syndrome. But that is the Stockholm Syndrome at work, because the dictates of that syndrome is that when you have been a prisoner, like you'll see situations where somebody has been a prisoner of war, for example, and they grow to, they are so traumatized by what's happening to them that they grow to love their captors or think that they love them, you know, because that's the only way they have of dealing with
they
it.
They shut down and become acclimated, it sounds
Exactly. And so that, and a lot of people, they will blame the victim and they'll say, well, you know, I don't feel sorry for her. I mean, she's stupid. She must like to be abused. But you'd never say that about a prisoner of war. And so it's just, it's a domesticated version of the Stockholm Syndrome is what you're seeing there.
Wow, that's interesting.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
We have a caller on the line. I'm going to bring this caller in. Caller 615-481. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Oh, yeah. How you doing, girl? It's the next level. I'm just.
Hi, darling. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Hello, Jade. Hello, everyone. I didn't know this was the topic, but I do have a story about a young lady that I used to date whose father was basically going through each one of the sisters. And he was actually in law enforcement. And I actually sat down and talked to him, you know, him not knowing that I knew what was going on. But it had become such commonplace that, you know, the sisters were joking with the next sister, with the younger sister, that, you know, they're going to be next. And, I mean, just to, you know, the mentality of it, to whereas it's become so commonplace that it's not even, they've just, I wouldn't say accepted it, but suppressed it because, you know, they know that it's kind of almost like a hopeless situation. And then the fact of, it's like, you know, the mother, it seems like sometimes the mother knows, but she doesn't, she's turning a blind eye to it. And it's just, it's kind of hard for me to fathom because I'm a man, you know, and I would listen to her stories, but it was just really hard for me to wrap myself around how a father could do that to his daughters. I mean, it's just, it's just beyond my perception. But is that commonplace where it just happens so much that everybody becomes functionally dysfunctional in the situation?
Absolutely. Especially when you, I'm not a man, so I don't know, but I'm assuming for brothers like you who have to endure this on your end with the stories. If you have a daughter yourself, and you're like, I can't even imagine, like I just can't, you know, and that becomes even more troubling to you to have to, you know, love this woman and have that image in your head that this is her father, you know. I have a daughter myself, and this lady is, you know, her father is doing it, you know. So I just can't imagine someone in your position to have to go through that.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, the amazing thing to me is that women find the strength to continue to you know, strive to, for some degree of normalcy, because I've actually encountered through my past relationships a few women that has happened to, because I think is what the statistics are, like one out of every four women have been molested. So I have ran across, I mean, several women, and I think, I guess the common thread that I seem to notice is that once they trust you enough to be able to talk to you about it and see that you don't judge them or whatever, it kind of creates a level of comfort. And I think the most common thing that they've all said is they had to learn to forgive.
Absolutely.
You know,
so
like
it's
way beyond my spectrum of understanding. But I'll just, you know what I mean? All I can do is just try to, like I said, love them for who they are, not judge them, and be in. And when they feel comfortable enough to go there or have that recall and talk to me about it, just be sincerely, sincerely listen. And if they want some input, give it, or just be there to just listen to them as they kind of relive it and just try to cleanse themselves of it. And understand that why certain things that I may do, not understanding, you know, just being me, can trigger, you know, certain things in them because of these episodes that they experience. So that's kind of it.
Absolutely. Wow.
Yes, and I would also, I mean, first of all, I really commend you, you know, for being there for your friends and loved ones and for understanding. And also, if I may make a suggestion, if you'd like to visit a website called www.thehotline.org, that is the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and it's international. And so if you want to, and they have phone numbers on there, and they have guidelines and helpful articles. And so if you would like to visit, it's www.thehotline.org. And if you want to pass those along to your friends and just to let them know that they are not alone and that they don't have to endure this. And at the National Domestic Violence Hotline, they can give you resources. They can tell them where to go, like shelters and counselors in their area. And so I would really strongly suggest that because they don't have to live that way. And, again, I really commend you for reaching out and helping them.
Well,
yeah.
And just as one last thing is I'm talking about women who have, because I'm a lot, I'm older, so I'm talking about women who this has happened to in their teens. The one situation I was talking, was happening like years ago, but encountering women that are now in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and at one point even in their 60s, and how it has still affected them and it's passed them. And like I said, being for them to be able to kind of talk to me about it and me understand it to whatever degree I can, but just being a little bit more sensitive in how I approach it. And I guess for a lot of men out there that don't recognize it, and just understanding that even though it may have happened 30 years or 40 years ago or even longer, to be a little bit more sensitive about it because those are still wounds that haven't healed. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We're all works in progress. So it's just imperative for us to understand that and be a little bit more sensitive to it if we can, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's what we need. We need someone to be understanding, and that's gonna, you know, be there for us and, you know, take us by the hand and let us cry on their shoulder, you know, to get all of that out. Because, you know, it's an everlasting scar, you know. Mm-hmm. And the more we can get someone, you know, especially our soulmate, our husband, our boyfriend, significant others, to understand that, and just to, you know, not put us down, and, you know, treat us like the perpetrator treated us, then, you know, it'll help to build our self-esteem back up. It'll help to get us back to that happy place, you know. But as long as we don't have that support and, you know, always being cut down and called names and different things like that, that's why these women, some of these women out here are drug addicts, or some of these women out here are prostitutes or whores, you know, and people don't really know their story. Because, you know, no one wakes up one morning and say, oh, I'm just going to be a hoe today, or I'm going to be a prostitute. You know, it's not like that. It takes you from point A to point B. You know, you have to really know a person's, where they're coming from, before you can judge them or look down on them. You know, never look down on a person unless you're helping them up. That's my motto. You know, as long as I can help somebody up, that's what I'm going to do. But this has been a very, very interesting show, and I do appreciate you ladies. I'm hearing a lot of background noise.
I just want to ask a quick question. Is someone communicating with cards? Oracle tarot cards on the show? I really needed to ask that.
Is somebody what?
Is someone communicating within the guests? I'm asking one of the guests. Are one of you communicating or doing something with tarot cards or oracle cards?
Not me.
Okay.
Not me, no.
I'm sorry?
No. It said neither one of them aren't.
Neither
Why did
one
you
of,
ask
I'm
that?
Hearing a lot of shuffling, but I'm also, like, seeing, like, somebody using cards. So I'm just wondering with somebody using cards. Okay.
Oh.
I'm hearing an awful lot of shuffling, and I'm like, the only reason that that's happening is somebody's communicating with cards.
Okay.
I don't know if y'all were hearing it, but okay.
Yeah, I was hearing some noise, but I don't know if it sounded like the same with what you was hearing, but I was hearing some
background noise.
I was
hearing feedback.
Noise.
Say that again?
That might have been
I'm
my
hearing
phone,
feedback.
You know.
Okay.
When I was talking, because, you know, I'm in my studio, I got some of everything.
Oh,
on.
Because
that's
it actually sounded like
phone.
Shuffling cards, like flipping and going through cards. So, okay. Okay.
Oh, okay.
There's always ways to communicate, so I don't know why I was saying that, and I'm hearing it. I hear the next level feedback all the time, and it never sounds like no shuffling cards.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, well, this has been a wonderful evening, and we're down to the wire. I do appreciate you, Megan and Sakara, for coming on this evening, and you're welcome to come back anytime.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, I think you do wonderful work with your show.
Thank you. Can you give us the information how, you know, our listening audience can get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. They can visit our site, metaphysicalerotica.com. And then we're also available on Amazon. Megan Hussey has quite a few books, and we've got co-written quite a few of the Mithrotic series. So my name is spelled Sakara, S-A-Q-Q-A-R-A-H. And you can find us at metaphysicalerotica.com. And if you have any questions, you can send me an email at Sakara@metaphysicalerotica.com.
Okay.
Yes, and we also have a Facebook page where you can visit us and, you know, join our community. And my website is at http://goldenmuse.tripod.com.
Okay. All righty then. We're going to give you girls a great big giant applause for tonight. Yeah. Yeah, you know. Well, yes.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Bringing Sexy Back is for the mature listening audience, as you all know, and our subject matter is sexual, but it's not limited to other social topics. We discuss relationships, current events, and issues relevant to everyday life. We appreciate you, our listening audience, for your questions and comments. And if you have a topic you'd like for us to discuss or would like to be a guest on the show, email me. That's gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Or either of my co-hosts, Rhea at RheaAlexis@yahoo.com. That's RheaAlexis@yahoo.com. Or JDinoBlasco@gmail.com. That's JDinoBlasco@gmail.com. In the subject line, type topic or guest. We're here every Wednesday from 10:30 p.m. for an hour to an hour and a half, and if the topic is juicy, we're here for the 2 full hours of adult conversation. Tune in every first Friday at 11 p.m. for Open Topic, and the last Friday at 10:30 p.m. for my musical show, which I do slow jams or house music or happy hour music, music from the 50s on up. And on Sunday at 7 p.m., stop by Gail's Blues Joint for some blues and sassy music. Remember, bringing Sexy Back does not mean you lost your sexy. Bringing sexy back is a state of mind and how you perceive yourself. Thank you, Rhea, Jade, Jadino, Megan, and Shakara, and The Next Level for being here tonight with me and all my listening audience out there. I love you guys for that. And come back next Wednesday and see you here on Sunday. And before we go, I want everybody to give a shout out of what they do, starting with Rhea.
Hi, this is Rhea. I am I'm a book reviewer, and the best way to reach me is via Facebook, and it's Rhea Alexis and Bex.
Okay. Next, Jadino. Oh, I'm sorry. I had him on mute. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jadino. I had you on mute for a second, darling. Let everybody know what you do.
Okay. I'm an artist, and you already gave my information. I want to take a second to say I was kind of quiet. I wanted to say something, but there's a lot of men out here that have been through the meat grinder. I know a lot of women have been through it too, but sometimes you see an adult male, you don't really see what's really in front of you. And when I say that, that's what I'm saying. Things happen to men too, just like it happened to women. And you have to survive and try to blend in and mesh in and try to go on with your life as well. So that's all I want to say about tonight.
Okay. And how can they get in touch with you?
JDNOBlasso@gmail.com. J.DNOBlasso@gmail.com. Or you can reach me on Facebook under JDNO Blasso.
All right, Jade is my guest co-host. You want to let everybody know where how to get in touch with you?
They can check us out on Thursdays, where you're my co-host, at Erotic Talk Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Saturdays, I do something there as well on the Juice.Love Zone at 10:30 p.m. with some slow jams. And then we have a network, TLC Talk Radio, that has some other shows, so you can check us out, blogtalkradio.com/WTLC Talk Radio, and check out the shows there as well.
All right, that leaves The Next Level. You want to let everybody know what you're doing on Blog Talk Radio, and what's The Next Level up to?
Well, like y'all don't know, because y'all were real responsible for me getting back on air. But anyway, I'll go ahead and I have a show on the TLC network, Jay's network, Back to Intimacy, Sensual Whispers, which is a poetry, intimate conversations, and basically anything involving romance and intimacy and respect for women. That's kind of like our ongoing themes, and that's every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. I also have my CD, Back to Intimacy, which is on sale at cdbaby.com, Amazon, and you know, you can check out the show page on the Back to Intimacy show on the WTLC network for those links. And then you can also contact me at The Next Level, which is spelled THENXLVL at yahoo.com. And, you know, that's me.
All right.
Yeah, well, I do appreciate everybody out there, the listening audience. And I'm sorry I forgot to open the chat room, you know, like I said, because I was rushing back over from The Next Level show. But, you know, next week I will have it open. And, you know, everybody have a beautiful rest of the week. You know, when you go to work tomorrow, you know, take your boss some donuts or something. Be nice, you know, love somebody. Call, you know, somebody that you need to call or tell them that you love them, because tomorrow's not promised to nobody, you know. And I've lost so many of my friends, you know. But I do love you guys, and, you know, hope to see you guys here next week. Everybody have a good night. And thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
My name is the best radio show on the internet.